favorite film.
Awful.
Hi, how you doing? Welcome to the show. This is Your Favorite Film is Awful. This is the show where we take your favorite films and we defend them against negative reviews. If you've been here before, hello again. If you've not, subscribe, do all the things in all the places, wherever you're listening to it. It'll be nice. It'll be great for us. I'm Luke Powell, by the way. Completely forgot to say my own name. And with me, as always, is the one and only Charlie. Hello, Charlie. How you doing?
I'm magic, mate. How about yourself?
You're magic today.
I'm always magic, yes.
Somebody noted that you say that, and I realised that I haven't heard you say it in a little bit while.
It's true.
Now, but no, there's no more of that. I just wanted to make a note of that. You can stop talking now, Charlie. I'm done with you. Stop.
Sweet.
No, I said stop. Come on. And with me as well is the one and only Sean Grimsley. Hello, Sean.
Word to your mum.
Indeed. And with Sean is Aaron Moran. Hello, Aaron.
Hello. Word to Sean's mother.
Word to Sean's mother.
Hi, Diane.
What a woman.
Oh, this is four voices. This is maybe too many. We may break and die. This is strange. Mm-hmm. So, how are we all? What have we all watched? Let's go around the room, starting with the newest person and ending with the oldest. So, Aaron, have you watched anything interesting, like one thing of note?
Mm-hmm. Well, 2 days ago, I actually saw A Last Place Part 2, or A Quiet Place Part 2, should I say.
A Quiet Place Part 2, yes.
Although there is a bit of a Freudian slip there, because I do think it is just taking off the Last of Us. And I think that is what most of the movie is a remake of The Last of Us. But I thought it was kind of fun. I really liked the first one. I thought it was very Spielberg, very 70s, very classic cinema in an old school way. This one, I felt like there was a lack of originality in where it went. I thought that the first 15 minutes or so, I thought was a really strong opening. And I think Krasinski really sets up a stage for what he could potentially do with this franchise. That's really exciting. But I do feel that within that kind of 15, 25 minute mark, the story does go into places that we've seen before. It felt a bit familiar to me. I felt like there was more interesting avenues to go down than some of the plot points that went away. I wouldn't spoil anything, but I felt that there was a more interesting movie in there, and I feel like Krasinski's choice to write this one completely alone compared to the three screenwriters of the original was a mistake, and I think it could have done with another draft or two to really bring some new depth and new originality to those ideas.
Fair. Okay, yeah. Well, that was some hot take and good information, I guess.
Succinct. I like succinct.
Yeah.
I've still not seen it yet, so I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I was as he was going through awful. That, I was like, Charlie hasn't seen it, don't spoil it.
I won't. I'm not going to do that.
Call yourself a film podcast host and you haven't seen A Quiet Place Part 2 yet. What's that about?
I've seen everything else in the cinema. Right.
That just makes it worse, Charlie.
I'm waiting. Do you know when you make that...
For what? It to come out on DVD?
She wants to see it.
That's it. You know when you make the deal with the girlfriend, where you're like, we've got to see that one together. That's what I've done.
No, you do what you did with Star Wars, and you watch it several times with different people.
Yeah, but he knows what happens when you do the Star Wars, and you have to go see it again.
It's called depression. Yeah.
It's called depression. It's called killing a franchise.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed.
Correct. Sean, your turn. What have you been up to? What have you watched?
I'll start with what I've been up to. I got vaccinated.
Ah, oh, I'm jealous.
Jab one, baby.
I booked my first jab. I should have it by the time this comes out.
Fantastic. I had zero side effects. I felt fine. I felt nothing other than a bit of sore arm. I know that's not true of everybody. But regardless, it doesn't kill you. It only makes you stronger, quite literally. And it makes those around you stronger because you won't die. So definitely, please, everybody get vaccinated. If you're on the fence... it doesn't stop you from getting COVID. It certainly reduces your chances, but it absolutely stops you from dying should you contract it. And that is worth having, not death.
Mm.
Yeah.
It is worthy not having death.
Yeah. And watching wise, I watched LA Confidential and Martin Scorsese's wonderfully underseen After Hours.
Okay. Nice.
Very underrated movie.
Very underrated. Mm. Career, one of those beautiful moments where to get The Last Temptation of Christ made, he had to go smaller and make something within constraints and within budgets. And it's It's a fantastic black comedy. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to my girlfriend, and she was tense the whole time, even though it's also really funny. So, yeah, like 9 out of 10, fully recommend. If you haven't seen it, it's essential Scorsese that's often forgot.
100%. I actually think that After Hours and John Cassavetes, if you put them together, you get the Safdie brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I feel.
100%
like.
100% true.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah, so I'm just nodding. I have no idea.
You call yourself a film podcast host.
Mate. I call myself a film podcast host. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen The Godfathers. I haven't seen a lot of big film student movies.
Everyone just
listeners, listeners, if your favorite film is The Godfather, or what else did you just say?
Any big movies.
Please write in, say you want to be a guest. We'll have you on. You know. I mean, it's not my podcast, just steal, I don't get to make that decision, but they will have you on.
We'll either, you know, depending on how the times are, maybe we'll have you on, maybe we'll just take that film and defend it for you, like we have been doing these past few weeks. Mm. Charlie, your turn.
I watched The Hills Have Eyes for the first time. Never seen it before.
No.
Great.
Fantastic. I mean, it seems like Wes Craven is like, made not just one, not two, but three horror classics, in my opinion. So, I think this
four,
was...
Four, if you include Scream 4.
That is true, which I still need to see. I still haven't seen Scream 4. That is true. That was his last movie as well. But The Hills Have Eyes, I thought was absolutely fantastic. Still scary to this day. It has that kind of quality to it that Texas Chainsaw Massacre has of like, it feels like you've picked up a camera that was lost somewhere, that someone had filmed this horrible experience that these people went through of being tortured by these like mutants. it's a great movie, a classic. I think I love how it's just shot in the day and it's scary, and it's balls to the wall. It feels very realistic in that sense, that if it could happen to you, and I think that's where the dread of it comes from. All round I thought it was a blast. I think obviously everything that's already been said about the movie's been said, so I won't say too much, but really, really enjoyed it. Recommend
it. And as an aside, I actually think that the Alexandra Aja remake is actually worth... It's worth a look.
I agree.
Worth a look. Yeah, 100%.
Okay, I'll check that out.
And Luke, yourself?
And myself. So I was going to bring A Quiet Place 2 to the party, but that already got taken. So I rewatched both the animated and live-action versions of Disney's 101 Dalmatians. Because, last week I mentioned Cruella, so I was like, hey, as I said, it made me want to go back. And I've realized that Cruella, they like pick and choose what they liked from both those previous films. And also, the live-action one is better. That is a hill I will die on. The animation is great. And the animated film's great, but it's slow as heck. The live-action one is hilarious, speedy, and it's great. It ticks all of the boxes for me as a youthful watcher, I say. I'm not that youthful. I am. Am I? We're about to talk about a millennial film, so I guess we're none of us are youthful anymore. Youth is gone. Hey, what film are we doing? We're doing Bo Burnham's comedy special, the first time on the show, a comedy special. Is this a film, are we calling this a film?
I think it's many things. I would argue it's a comedy special, musical, documentary film. I would argue it's the first of its kind as well. Almost. Unless there's someone out there who can correct me. One man show as well.
I mean,
yeah, I would say one man show. That's what I was thinking of it in.
It's like a YouTube video with a budget, really, isn't it? Let's get that out there.
A lot of YouTubers have big budgets now. I mean, have you seen that full fat guy? I heard he's got a Tesla. Suspended.
Well, I'm funny enough talking about like YouTubers get
well
lots of money.
Done, Matt Whittle. You did it.
Talk about YouTubers get lots of money. I heard that the Floyd Mayweather Logan Paul fight, Floyd Mayweather made more money than Michael Jordan did in his 15th NBA season.
Are you serious?
In that one fight.
Jeez. Yeah.
Wow.
God bless America.
So what you're saying is, what you're saying is Michael Jordan needs to fight Floyd Mayweather.
Jesus.
We don't watch it.
It'll surely be the last dance.
Aaron. Yes. I don't know if you know what we do here, but at the beginning of the top of the show, after we've said the title of the film, one of you lovely people get to tell us the plot synopsis. And this is going to be a weird one, but Aaron, what's the plot of Bo Burnham Inside, the comedy special musical film? Is that what you called it, Charles?
That works for me. I guess we can start by maybe giving a bit of context as to who Bo Burnham is, because it probably would help to even understand where this is coming from a little bit. He was a YouTuber that started at the very beginning of YouTube in 2006. He was one of the first, I mean, he truly was one of the first viral sensations. Over that time, he released a couple of specials for Netflix. There was What, Make Happy, and then he directed a feature film, I think 2018, that was,
yeah, 18, yeah.
That was called 8th Grade. That was fantastic. That was about a 13-year-old girl as she navigated the social media landscape that surrounds us today and certainly surrounds that generation. And now he's come out with Inside, which is, as you were saying, it's quite hard to classify in any specific way. But I think essentially it's almost told you at the start, this is Bo Burnham making something for as long as it takes over the course of lockdown, using only himself, only his own cameras, only his own equipment, no crew, edited old songs made by himself. So it's a totally from him as an artist perspective, and it's, you essentially watch for an hour and a half his kind of take on what the world has come to and what the social media landscape is and where we are at with Instagram and Twitter and social media and how it is affecting our minds, and uses that by doing musical comedy. He does like these documentaries, docudrama moments that we're not entirely sure. Are they fictional? Are they real? They're a bit of both, probably. And he's just playing a lot with the form that is kind of traditional stand-up comedy by intermixing it and kind of showing what it looks like not to have an audience. Obviously, right now, the idea of stand-up comedy feels ridiculous because that doesn't exist as of right now. So I feel like the Inside is his response to that.
Spot on.
Correct.
So, yep.
Yeah, not the most concise plot synopsis, but hey, I feel you hit the points.
I got you. It's a man in a room, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
Done. I could have done
That's
that.
That's what I was after.
It's a man in a room.
It's a man in a room. It's and a with a room. Half star review from Rep, it contains millennial comedy be like, lol, I'm so depressed. And that's your first review.
Oh, well, I mean, wow. Charles.
I mean, what could we say? I mean, it's just, these kind of reviews are like, how can you argue against that, you know? He obviously didn't. I mean, I think the jokes are funny. I think they're hilarious. I think he's making a good point with what he's saying. I guess it's millennial jokes, but I think it's the jokes stem from a truth that not just needs to be heard, but people know already. I just think that everything he does in the show, I was watching it, and the whole time I just kept thinking, how could you critique this? Even if you don't like it, you have to still give credit to the guy, because for me, I just found it an incredible achievement. This man is, you got to think about all the roles this guy's doing, and very fucking well as well. Not just like subpar, like very fucking well. Like, he's not only just singing the songs, telling the jokes in the songs, he's writing them, he's composing them, he's editing it, he's shooting it himself. He's also, you know, he's also a cinematographer as well. Like, the lighting choices he makes in this, and the way he uses lighting to get across a character or to get across a mood of a song was just blowing my mind. I couldn't stop saying how talented this guy is. It was blowing me away. I couldn't believe he did this on himself. It's something that I would take me a crew to try and do. And you know what I mean? And he did this all on his own, locked inside. I think it's more than just the jokes as well. I think it's an incredibly personal take on him. Look at himself. Like you said, it's hard to determine what's scripted and what is real. And I do agree with you. I think it's a bit of both. But I don't think that takes away from what is got across from this this film, and that is, you know, the problem with today's society, and also his frustration of trying to create. I mean, he mentions at the start of the special that he hasn't made a stand up set in like a half a decade. Yeah, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of him trying to get back to that in a way. But I think what's special about it is not obviously it works on its own. It's funny, the jokes work on its own, but you also have these incredible making of stuff where you see behind the camera. And that's what separates it from everything else for me. You see his frustration, you see the turmoil he goes through of like, is this even good? What am I doing? Is it a load of rubbish? And to me, I think that's why it kind of annoys me this review would say, oh, it's just millennial comedy. It's like, it's way more than that, in my opinion. Would you guys agree?
Well, I mean, there's definitely a side of me that finds that kind of criticism is dismissive of something that people don't fully understand. I think it's easy to go, oh, isn't this just self-aware comedy about stuff that's happening now? But I think you can see from the audience response and even from the responses of Charlie and Sean, I know, I'm not sure of Luke's, but I know for a fact that this stuff is touching people. Like it does, it is, people do really feel with that level of introversion and social isolation that occurred over last year and about what that's done to the creative's brain. And I think there's a vulnerability to the sequences of him struggling to make this stuff that makes it all the more important. It would be so much less interesting, like Charlie's saying, if it was just the finished pieces by themselves presented, because then you're like, okay, great, you're just way better than the rest of us. But there's something about watching that struggle of someone not be happy with what they're doing and constantly go back and go back that I think is really powerful. And I think that watching a piece of art be created in an entirely kind of interpersonal space like the way he's doing it is completely new. There's something completely original about the idea of watching someone create entirely from their own home using social media as their viewpoint to create.
Yeah, and to kind of add on to that, I think it's true artists, film and video, you know, which isn't of itself its own genre. I think this, it's a comedy special, yes, but purely by form and by chance of a global pandemic, you know, I fully believe that some of these songs he would have done live on stage and they would have been fun because he's always interacted with his surroundings in a very interesting way. If you've seen any of his other stand-up specials, I genuinely believe that this is true artist film and video because it has such a personal element to it. And he's definitely touched on it before, you know, in his live shows. But I think I just wonder if there's so much simpatico because there is so much that we can relate to on screen. Those moments in between where it's like, you know, we did all have good times in lockdown. It wasn't all bad. Like, you know, there were, but social media and technology was a huge part of that. And I think that's adding to the success of it is that he's really touching on something that is very much of the moment, of now, that has such a cultural impact. And he's navigated comedy, music, but also his own struggles, which in some ways are universal struggles of the here and now. I think I said it to Aaron before we started rolling. I was like, he's raised a bar so high that I didn't even know that there was a bar that could be that high in the first place.
Yes. 100%. Oh, wow. I agree. 100% agree with that. And I also think he carries it all with a level of self-awareness. I feel like this definitely could have all slipped into, oh, look at this guy, you know, being very narcissistic. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
Hugely.
It doesn't come across that at all. He's very aware of what he's doing. He keeps commenting on that. He makes songs that are commenting on whether what he's doing is right or wrong in that aspect. And yeah, like you said, Sean, I think it's a very relatable comedy special, and I think that's what makes it funny. That's where comedy comes from, isn't it? Is the relatable aspect, is the truth, is getting to the truth of something. And he definitely does that with this. Putting things in perspective. I mean, talking about, obviously, it's funny, it's hilarious. I mean, just things like the internet, the song that he talks about with the internet.
Yeah, just, Welcome to the Internet.
I just thought there was something so genius in it being like a carnival song, almost, with like this kind of like creepy kind of, like, this was what the internet, this is the representation of the internet, this is what he looks like, this kind of creepy dude is trying to lure you in all the time, all this information. I thought that was so clever. I think, because I think what, why I kind of call it a film in that sense is that there, with each song, although, I mean, you guys know more about his other stuff, I've only seen bits and bobs, so I don't know too much, but with each song, it's not just the song is funny, it's also, he's creating characters within mm-hmm. the songs. They're characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I found truly amazing about it. It's not even that, just like the song about the woman who's trying to talk to her mum about, I think she was dying or something, and it's about the white women's Instagrams. Like that, there was, he must have done so much research into the pictures, because I feel like everyone has seen someone take those pictures. And like, again, that was hilarious, but also showing of how performative we've all become because of social media. How, you know, we say we want these issues to be spoken about, but there's also a level of, well, you're kind of getting clicks off of it, sort of thing. And he's playing off that whilst also doing a song that's funny, and he's lighting it with, like, just blew me away.
The, what you were saying about white woman's Instagram, and I think part of the reason that joke works, and a lot of the jokes in this work, and don't become annoying in the way that that review was kind of saying, is that I think that the film doesn't ever veer into the misogyny that could, that joke could be. Yes. I think, like, there's so many points, much like the problematic song and all of them, where he's the line that he's on is so thin, and it's so impressive how he doesn't become either. I think he doesn't go cringy. I think he knows how to balance that silliness, but he also knows how to balance meanness. The film is entirely critical of so many things, but never felt critical in a way that I thought it was attacking things that didn't deserve to be attacked. I think he was more talking about the structures that were put in place that are putting people down, rather than any kind of thing about telling people off for enjoying Instagram or for enjoying videos of themselves. I don't think it's about that. I think he's talking about something deeper, which is our relationship with these things and how much that they are, how much our identity is now intertwined with that.
I also think Inside is a really good title for it, because, you know, it's a perfect parallel of him being forced to find... We're so enamored with this because we're stunned by how creative someone can be within the confines of four walls.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think he's addressing the idea that that's kind of how we're putting our lives, like, for other people. We're presenting them on these four walls, where it'd be, you know, the square that is your phone, or the square that is the grid of Instagram. You know, he's challenging us in some ways to say, like, we're kind of doing this to ourselves, but there is good in this, mm-hmm. as much as we're allowed to potentially criticize it. But I agree with Aaron. I don't think it ever veers into nasty.
I think it's
posing questions, and it's challenging structures that I think a lot of people are taking for granted, but I actually think probably need addressing.
I 100% agree with all that. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Fair.
Go team.
Well,
just want to point out quickly that whilst that was happening, a bug crawled up my leg and, like, bit me. And, like, it was quite big, and I was, like, trying to fuck around. So when you watch it back, everyone will see me, like, fucking around with this bug, like, trying to flick it off my leg. Yeah, like, it bit me. I was like, what? I didn't know that thing could bite.
Her name is Jade, Charlie.
Oh, no.
Long.
Cut that bit.
I don't know what's happening.
Anyway, let's go to the next review, shall we? Less of this bug biting talk.
I love the...
that bit's getting cut.
Fuck yeah. I wish, but this is the Charlie edit.
I'll edit this.
Charlie doesn't edit out things. What are you on about?
Are you crazy? I edit everything out.
I'm going to edit that out, that's for sure.
There is a thin line on what gets cut out, and it's a small section. Anyway, let's go to Numb Creed next Fan with a 1 out of 10. So another half-star review, basically. Bo Burnham was funny. Once upon a time. Make Funny was pretty good. This special is completely insufferable. Full of white apologetics, virtual signaling through acknowledgement of privilege. The whole abrupt transition stick was already overused years ago in Make Happy. This special is garbage. Please stop calling self-deprecation over your race comedy. It's pathetic.
I mean, I think that's a pretty loaded review. I think he's saying a lot about himself in that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, certainly, as in, I don't think that the... In terms of the comedy itself, I think it absolutely is funny. And I think that there's a reason it's working for people, and it's the reason it's doing so well right now, is because this humor... I think self-deprecation is in a miss. I think we have so much narcissism in so much of the content that's being made, and there's so much homogenized cinema out there, so much homogenized TV, that I think that this level of subjectivity and introspection is actually something we need right now. As we're trying to evaluate what happened during lockdown and how different people experienced it, I think getting such a singular experience set over 90 minutes and an absolutely essential thing to happen. I think seeing some person collapse on camera mentally, be it performatively or otherwise, and use that for comedy purposes is something that we can all connect with, because we've all been struggling to connect with people for the last year and a half. I think like the attempt at being self-deprecating whilst also criticizing so many things that are wrong with the world is something that's absolutely necessary, and I think he does that line brilliantly.
I was just going to add to that and just say I completely agree. I think, you know, there is a level of self-deprecation, but I think it's with a universal thing. You know, 90% of what he's talking about is something that every single person, certainly in the Western world anyway, uses on a day-to-day, you know. I think that's why it's insanely relatable. And he's done that within the boundaries of something that has become globally understandable at this time, which is those mental breakdowns, that is being stuck indoors. It's like figuring out, who am I if I'm not outside? Who am I on the inside? And what are the things that I'm presenting to myself as the outside whilst I'm trapped inside? And even when I'm outside, who am I presenting? You know, is there a white privilege to it? Because I know that the review hints at that. I mean, yes. But, you know,
I mean, even in the first song, he talks about, what is it? Should I stop making this? Should I give away all my money? No. And then a bright light appears and is like, you'll do it with your indescribable comedy. And Bo's like, oh, me, a white guy? Yes, you'll save the world. So, and that's that whole white privilege, white savior, chosen one motif.
And it is self-deprecating. He gets the joke out of that by being self-deprecating. But it's like, at what point do you... It's great that he addresses it. And I think, you know, if there's one person out there that I would absolutely defy as an ally, regardless of what the subject is, I think it's Bo Burnham. I think he's very self-aware. I think he knows what his opinion is. I think at his core, and I think this special proves it really well, he is a good, decent person. And he is sympathetic. Yeah. And empathetic, and I think the beauty of this show is really it's not just him showing that, but showing that even with all of that, there's struggle.
I also think that the song Problematic, which comes up, it's that 80s kind of what is it kind of referencing? It's almost like dance videos.
Flash dance, right? Exactly.
I think that song is really powerful in what it's saying, because I think that the level of accountability he says about even dressing up as Aladdin, that's an experience that I think a lot of white people can share. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad one. I think it's just about, hey, I've learned some things as I've grown up, and I've acknowledged that through other people's point of views, I might have changed, I might have said and done some things. But he's managed in a way that so many comedians have failed, as they just complain and complain about cancel culture. He has managed to make great comedy about the difficulty of navigating cancel culture, and not in a way where he's seeing that as the problem, but he's seeing how do I get past this and deal with that, but also be a decent person who acknowledges my failings.
Yeah, I mean, ownership is really the most important part of any mistake that you've made. 100%. And if you don't own it, you can't, there's no forgiveness. You know, the world is built on second, third, fourth chances, you know? And I think, you know, Bo Burnham is saying, I'm not perfect, I'm not innocent, but I'm trying to do good.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
100%. I think he's constantly, like you said, he's constantly checking himself. I never really found any of it virtual signaling. Because I feel like he's constantly asking both the questions on either side. He's constantly playing both characters of, like, do you know what I mean? Of the bad and the good, and what he's done right, what he's done wrong. And he's, you know, emphasizing these characters. He's emphasizing these points with the characters he creates in the songs as well. So I find that very scathing of that person to say that. And kind of, I don't know how you could get that from it. Because all I could get was, it felt so genuine to me. Like, even if people were saying they didn't like, if they're scripted when he's crying or whatever, like, it still felt genuine. It's still, like you said, Sean, like, what lockdown forced us all to look inside ourselves, no pun intended, to see who we are. I mean, what do we do in society? What's the worst thing we could do to someone when they've murdered someone or done something? Is we lock them away on their own. You know what I mean? And this happened to everyone. And I think it was interesting to see, this is what happens when you lock a creative individual inside on their own. This is what they come out with. This is what, this is the turmoil they go through. This is, and I think that's, I found that absolutely fascinating. And I'm sure everyone on this podcast can relate to it in some degree, all being people that create stuff in their own time and stuff, and understand that turmoil of needing to create something. But also questioning whether what you're doing is nonsense or not.
I do struggle with the criticism a little bit of, oh, this is narcissistic. When has comedy not been narcissistic? I think it's literally part of the point of comedy, is that it's through this person's viewpoint. And I feel like this is getting criticized in those ways and the ways others aren't, just because it's only him. But I feel like it's the exact same thing that's happening, which is, he's just giving you his opinions and he's framing them in comedic, funny, but also introspectively deep ways. But I think every single segment also works as comedy. Like, I think if you wanted to do a stupid reading and just, like, shallow, you could just laugh at the, there's loads of bits that are just funny and entertaining for what they are. And I don't think you have to take it in terms of, oh, I'm going to learn this, or I'm going to feel bad about being a white person or whatever. You don't have to put that onto it, but you certainly can. And I think that the what it works about it is that there are, it's worth repeat viewings. You can feel differently different times that you watch it. I think certain moments can really stick out to you in ways that wouldn't beforehand. I think depending on the mood you go into it, you could come out finding an incredibly depressing show or an incredibly uplifting one. And I think that's fine.
That's very true.
I think we're all kind of coming out on the side of, like, we see this as an incredible achievement of art in nearly every single form possible, in one thing. And it's like, we've all been through, we've all been trapped inside, and you know, Aaron and I have been writing scripts. Charlie, you've been writing some things. I've been doing some music. You know, Luke, I'm not sure what you've been doing, like, at that level, but you're a creative person as well. And it's like, if I had made just one of the things that is in this special, I would have been happy with myself.
Yes, same.
To have done all of that and to know that there's still more on the cutting room floor. It's an achievement of art. If nothing else, you can, you 100%. I can't not respect it.
Yes, and that's it. And that's it for me, is whether you liked it or not, you can't not tip your hat or respect that this, what he did through that whole process. I think it's insane to me. Blows my mind to think everything he did. Luke, you look like you disagreed with some of that there. I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts.
Well, the issue is, so we've done comedies before, we've done horrors before, and it does always come down to the fact that comedies and horrors are the hardest to, like, defend against and come at a more critical mindset, because they're so subjective, which makes this even more subjective, because it is it's presented as a comedy special. So if you, as Aaron said, it's one of those that depending on how you approach the medium depends on how it's going to affect you. And for me, I watched this when it came out. And I did the very casual viewing of, it was on in the background and I was looking up on my phone every now and then. And then the second time was yesterday in anticipation for this. And that was a slog. I kind of wanted to save this for the end, but you've drawn it out of me now. I agree that is a piece of art. You should appreciate it because it's as you guys just said, if any one of us had made a single one of the music videos that's featured in the special during our lockdowns, we would be incredibly happy and incredibly proud. And the fact that it's an entire movie length of lots of little things, it's a remarkable achievement, and especially to do play all of the parts of the crew as well as being the only cast member. But it is, I can understand where the reviewers so far have come from. It is very millennial humor. It is that woke culture. It is, and it does address those things in a way that could be seen quite humorously. And I can acknowledge that and accept it. I just didn't feel it. You get me?
Why do you think you didn't feel it? What's the connection that's missing?
Was it with the humor, or was it with the more personal stuff?
I think it was a mix, because I went back and I listened to some of his other works that he's done and are on YouTube, and as I went through, because I've Welcome to the Internet, I listened through that on YouTube. I watched that through YouTube, because after he released the special, he threw it on up some of the videos onto YouTube. I gained more enjoyment from watching that in the individual music video on YouTube than I did watching it as part of the 90-odd minute set. So I don't know.
Do you wonder though if one of the things that I find the most incredible about this is how the form is, the challenging of the form is intrinsic to this.
Mm.
I mean I can appreciate the idea that it could be a slog, and I personally think it would be the non-comedy moments that would potentially make it feel that way. But for me, those are actually the moments where I was just like, okay, what's he trying to do with this? And I felt like I got let inside, hence why it's perfectly titled, the mind of someone that isn't just doing a comedy special. Like, he's trying to push the form, and it's challenging. Yep. You know, it's his, you know, I mean, I go over the top with this statement, but it's almost like his rite of spring. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's really challenging convention. And I personally, I'm excited by that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited by that because I'm really curious to see how people respond to it, because he's done some really European art house stuff and gone, here it is with mainstream content. And I think it's going to open a lot of people's minds to stuff that they didn't have before. That's not to belittle your experience of it. I just think it's very interesting. I also wonder if also that was maybe the point. That's why it's that extra bit longer. He's like, this is what it's all about. It's not just comedy. I want it to potentially feel like a slog to you.
Mm.
I wonder, Luke, because you said that you preferred it in the segment up on YouTube. Does that speak to something about the work itself, which is that like some of these will really impact and some of these won't, you know, and that there are certain sections where you can imagine putting that on Facebook and everyone you know liking it, and then other times putting different ones of them up, and people, if you put, let's say, the Pray For Me sequence up completely contextless, people be like, what the fuck is this? I don't understand what I'm looking at. Whereas there's some of the jokes like White Women's Instagram and FaceTime With My Mom, these are crossover jokes. Like, everyone can basically relate to that kind of humor. But there is, I wonder, is there at some point in that artist profile that it kind of takes place, the inside is in. I wonder, did you not just connect with the form of, I'm going to delve into myself and we're going to see what I come up with for an hour and a half, but it is just going to be you dealing with my head for an hour and a half.
Mm.
And I could see how that could be a slog for someone. Yeah. I could see how that there is almost, if you didn't love the form, there could be an overabundance of content here.
Yeah.
You could almost be like, I feel overwhelmed with the amount of stuff I am meant to process.
I wouldn't say I was ever overwhelmed. If anything, it kind of reverts back to almost my original statement when I asked if it's a film, because I've seen a vast majority of the styles, techniques, and some of the themes and things that are being said on other on YouTube. I like there are much longer.
Have you seen it better than this?
I wouldn't say a complete that like the completed form that this takes. No, but elements most likely.
Yeah, but that's but what that's makes the it same special, with though. Anything. That's what makes it special though, is because it's a combination of all of those things. No one's done that. No one's done that before. No one's. What blew my mind about is that I'm watching. It's a stand-up set where a guy's singing his jokes, but also well, he's playing.
Yeah,
with,
I think you can get rid of that with, line entirely because that's just his style. That would be like saying the set like a
no,
similar statement about
but
Tim Minchin.
I wasn't finished what I was saying. I wasn't finished what I was saying. What I was going to say was that it's he's doing that, but also playing with aspect ratio and lighting. Do you know what I mean he's using different forms from a different medium. And putting it into stand-up comedy, as well as I know, obviously his thing is that he sings the songs, but he's doing that whilst also using film techniques. Do you know what I mean to emphasize the jokes and to emphasize the and that's what separates it from me. Do you know what I mean? I know he has that he has the plus of he's you know he's filmed it over this weird time period where no one could actually do stand-up, but he did it and he did it all on his own. All on his own, which is insane to me. I found it incredibly inspiring in that sense. It kind of, I feel like it, I found it was kind of almost, not only was it a message about looking inside, but also just do it. Just do what you're going to do, mate. Just do it. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what I loved about it was to see just like, I'm just going to do this thing. I'm just going to keep doing it. I'm going to drive myself mad doing it, but I'm just going to do it to keep the time going.
I also very much appreciated how in a lot of his other work, especially the comedy work, there is that self-deprecation and almost a Zach Galifianakis level of like, you are the audience and I am me and we do not, I almost dislike you and I'm above you and stuff. And I felt like this was his first time, especially in the last half hour, where it felt like he was giving you, and he was trying to be one with the audience in a way. I felt like he wasn't trying to talk down to an audience at all. It was more like, I'm actually really fucked up by this. Yeah. Like, this is really bad for us. And this has hurt my head. Mm. Like, I am really struggling. And I feel like there's something so original and powerful about the idea that for the first hour, you have all these great songs that will pop off on social media and that'll be fantastic. But in the last half hour, you watch someone try to deconstruct what is the reason for them doing it at all? And why am I doing this at all? And is there any point?
Exactly, that as well. Yeah.
In that pursuit of that question, more brilliant art, I think, is made. Like, I think that song, Pray For Me, becomes a very powerful anthem for a bunch of people inside who are like, I need someone to... It's so important to have someone who can lift you up. And especially at a time where like this, when it feels so isolated and a song that's so emotional, but it captures that almost Kanye-esque energy of like, you can fucking do it too. If you put that vocoder on your voice and stuff, it becomes like this, like rising from the ashes kind of moment that I think is so cinematic. Like, I think that's more cinematic than most movies I'll ever watch. Like when that moment, when it cuts and he says, are you looking at me? And you're staring at your screen and your phone. I think that's real cinema. I think he's done something there that most directors could only hope to achieve.
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting that you said the first time you watched this, Luke, you said you watched it whilst looking at your phone. Mm. I'm curious about how that interaction would play, because it's almost like that's the very thing that he is trying to challenge in some ways as well. And you know, assault. I can't speak to that viewing. I just have a no looking at my phone while I watch anything kind of rule. But yeah, leading on to what Aaron said, I keep coming back to that idea of like the privilege of this all. And I was like, yes, he got paid for this. He's funded by Netflix. He was using some nice expensive lenses and it didn't cost him anything to make this other than, well, it probably cost him a lot emotionally and time-wise, but it didn't cost him financially to do this. And there is a privilege in that, you know, there are people that had to work throughout the entirety of this pandemic, people that had to work and die, people that lost loved ones. We don't know the extent of that and how that affected him, but, you know, in the scheme of what the special presents, this is very insular. Whilst tackling the universality of it all. But I don't know. I feel like ultimately, and I hope, you know, I know you didn't necessarily, you don't think it's as great as we three do, Luke, but I wonder how this will play in a few years when we're out of the pandemic and see That's if that true. Slog feels the same, because actually it's kind of like, this is so like what everybody's gone through, or that you can relate to, or there is something here that is still so close to you. I wonder if some separation and how we might look back on it. And again, for me, that only adds to why this could potentially be great. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this ages.
I mean, yes, I think I the ending is classic Truman Show. I think like what he's gone from there, like it's such a cinematic reference. I think that those images at the end could become part of the kind of the visual kind of memory. I think there's something about him trying to get back in that door and that hard cut to back in his room that is incredible. And it kind of it lifts you off in a way that most Netflix movies are not doing. I think that there's, in the confinement, he's found something that we didn't realize we could do. I think that's what is really impressive is that I didn't even realize that I could do that if I just took my wall, essentially, and did that. I didn't realize the potential in that. And I think he found potential in it. I think it's really incredible.
100%. I 100% agree with that. That's exactly what I took from it. It was just like, I can't believe that he achieved this. And like you said, it changed my mind of how I saw things, of like, oh, I didn't even think that was possible. That I could just have a wall and a house on my own and a couple of lights and a camera and just have at it, you know. I just thought that was mind-blowing.
And not in a way where I think we're just giving them props because, oh, great, you shot on your thing and that's good. It's because it's actually excellent. It's like, it's such good cinematography. Like, his visual eye and his editing eye is so sharp. It's not just the compressor that he did it, but it's like any idiot could do it. He's doing it at such a level of professionalism.
I have every single piece of equipment needed to do what he has done.
I
didn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I feel. It's true. And not only if I tried to do that, I don't know if I could have done it to that level, that degree. It's that excellence, like you said, that it's not just good. It's not just that he did this on his own. It's that the cinematography could be praised from any other cinematographer. Like, it's just as good as if he had a set of people doing it. That's what's mind-blowing. Oh. Do you know what I mean? Is, if not more so.
And there's real mood to those scenes. I feel like there's a strong horror element running through a lot of it.
I do agree with what Sean says. I just wanted to say quickly, I think what Sean has said is right in the sense that I think it'll be interesting in a couple of years' time to look back. I don't, like, it's like all things, I believe, you can't really necessarily, depending on what the film is, say a film is like a classic or the influence that something has on something until you've gave it like 5 years, 10 years, maybe even longer. And I think that I'm very intrigued, like Sean is, to see if people are still talking about this or if in a couple of years' time this feels as relevant as it does now. Or as, you know, as a much of a time capsule as it does now. Do you know what I'm saying? Of the universal feeling of socially, politically, everything about it. It's, I know it's kind of weird thing to say, but like, I do think the man has his finger on the pulse. I thought that when he made Eighth Grade, and I feel that even more so now. He knows, he explains it all, everything that's happening with what's going on today in a great, an amazing way. Funny, hilarious way.
And that was only the second negative review that we've spoken about.
Oh yeah.
What time is it? Okay, fuck it. So this is from Matadactyl. God, that's a great name.
Matadactyl.
Half star. I haven't been so annoyed by a piece of media in such a visceral way since I watched Split. Insufferable theatre kid energy meets performative narcissist nasal gazing bullshit disguised as progressive mental health awareness / cultural deconstruction. Ugh.
I mean, it's interesting because all of the things that we really like about it, that person has said it's not those things. Like that's what it thinks it is, but it's not. And it's interesting to like find, it's interesting to kind of find the line between where those two things meet and it's almost like an unstoppable force and an immovable object. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah.
Where do we find that? Well, yeah, it's spoken to some of us. And you know, it hasn't spoken to you quite as strongly, Luke. But I think you raised some interesting points, Luke, about you know, challenging whether it's a film or not. And you know, like one of the things that it doesn't do, which films typically do, is it doesn't really have a narrative structure in the sense of, you know, like, here's the journey that the character goes on. It for me, I can find one, and I you know, you've made some good points about it. But in the traditional sense, it's skit, skit, skit. But there's that. I find that there's a richer text where there's more going on, and the moments in between, or the order of those skits actually require some analysis. But I think, you know, in a similar way, it's the same thing. It's like, where do we find that distinction between what is a film or what is, you know, that we're considering it art, where somebody else is saying no, it's confusing itself for that because it's too self-involved.
Well, as I was saying earlier, that's the subjective nature of comedy, and this being a comedy special, it's that whole fact that we can both approach the same piece of media, have the same thing, but it's on either side. So with this, we've approached it and seen those narcissistic things as addressing them and making fun of, like, pulling them into the light and making fun of it and being like, hey, this is an issue, but here's a lighter edge, while someone else is only going to see the issue presented in a way that they don't agree with. And they're like, well, this isn't funny. You're just being a narcissistic dickhead. Fuck off.
Is that your opinion of this?
This is the review, like the general review mindset that I've had to stew in to find these reviews.
I've never considered what it, the dark rabbit hole you must wander down every week to find certain negative reviews.
Whatever film it is, it's just like, oh, okay, that was an issue, I see. Oh, I am the fool.
I mean, to the point of it being navel-gazing, I think absolutely. But I also think that's what this is. Like, as in, that's what you're going to look for if you're looking for any kind of one-man show setup. I think that's part of what this is, and I think that's what we're signing up for. I think that's what we want, is a singular experience. I think that's absolutely part of the appeal. And where other people find pretentiousness, I found profundity. I thought he was really saying something. I thought, as someone who of the ages where I found what he's saying about anxiety and how terror, and especially that line where he's talking, I think that analogy about how we've turned into the coal miners who are going up to air in order to record content for the much more vital, much more real viral space. And then he intercuts that with a joke about pirates and laminating maps, which I think is a wonderful joke. Like, I think both of those things work brilliantly together. The point is brilliantly made, but the joke is absolutely hilarious and completely ridiculous. And that's the reason I think this comedy works, is because he's waving his finger. He's telling you these things, but he's never at one point not saying, I'm also a fucking white guy telling you these things. Do never take me that seriously. And I think he's always prepared to undercut himself, which makes it not come off narcissistic, not come off annoying.
For me, it's how he's able to skirt the line between and navigate between ridiculous absurdity and something that, you know, that you found profound, which I also found profound. You know, it's a raw emotional openness. And I think there is something to be said for this idea of, you know, narcissism. But anytime you want to show someone anything that you've done, whether even if it's an opinion, intrinsically, just by being alive and having a subjective experience and wanting to talk about it, we're all narcissistic. I think I personally will put a full stop and saying, I don't think this is narcissistic because he's trying to share vulnerability. And I don't think that could ever be narcissistic. Because he's trying to share it and say, I'm struggling. And the second you say that, I think narcissism comes from a place of like, I'm right. And I don't think that Bo Burnham at any point goes through this and says, I'm right.
I mean, couldn't the argument
be made?
I mean,
he even says that song, the Shut Up song, when he's saying, like, he's telling everyone to shut up, isn't he? When he's telling, like, himself to shut up, and he's telling everyone else to shut up. And then he says, like, I'm aware this is ironic because I'm telling everyone to shut up. But I should shut up. Yes, and like that to me summed up what you were saying. But sorry, Luke, carry on what you said.
What I was going to say is, couldn't the argument be made that even though he is like saying this and like expressing this point of view, as you just said, Sean, the fact that he's the one saying it does kind of circle round back to that narcissistic issue that some people have taken from it, because at the end of the day, it's one person say, hey, look at me for an hour and a half, tell you these bad things. And yes, he is saying the bad things, that, like, as you just said, but the fact of the matter is, it is one guy doing that thing. Like, if he hadn't done any of the elements to make this a creation, we wouldn't have it, and thus we'd still kind of been in a similar place, but we wouldn't have the experience. So it's
exactly
that, it is that full stop of every theater kid, every person that wants to be in film is narcissistic in some degree, because it's, hey, look at me, look what I can do as a director, an actor, a script writer. So like, I can understand from both point of views that it is narcissism, but it is narcissism like presented as narcissism.
And I also think that the way he's using Instagram, social media, like the forms themselves are inherently narcissistic. So if you took any impression other than narcissism from, I think that they're set up to be narcissistic. Like white woman's Instagram is, it gets deeper when it gets that background of who her family is and who her parents are, but the idea, like the form itself, is all about narcissism. And I think he's playing with narcissism. I think narcissism is a word that gets thrown around a lot, but it almost becomes meaningless in the context of social media debates, because what is not narcissistic within this space?
You know what I mean? Aaron and I were fortunate, I'm just going to do some name dropping here. Aaron and I were fortunate to actually meet Bo Burnham.
Oh, nice.
At the Sundance Film Festival, when he was coming to town with 8th grade. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to see a talk with him as well whilst we were there. And, you know, he's very much, you know, 8th grade in and of itself as well, focused on addressing the role of social media and this constant being on the internet. And the role it plays in our lives. And I think I can go into this with a slightly biased viewpoint of knowing that that's an interest point for him. And seeing and being prepared to say, I think this guy's got something to say about it. I'm willing to let him speak. I think if you didn't know who he was, this could be incredibly alienating. I also think, I wonder the demographic reach that this has. I'm curious about generationally how far does it sense? Because, you know, the youngest person here, I think,
that's a good point.
How old are you?
24.
So, and you're 24, Charlie, right? And I'm 10 years older than all of you, and it still spoke to me. But that 10 years is massively different, because I remember the first 15 years of my life without being on the internet 24/7. Whereas you guys essentially haven't had that, and that's a very different experience. I think the one thing that
well,
we
even
all
more
say
so,
about
I feel
is...
like we. Sorry, I was just gonna say, I think like our generation, we kind of still had that little space before the internet really became what it is, and I would say like my siblings, for example, who are younger than me and stuff, I'd say they don't know any different. And I'm intrigued to see. I think they'll get it, but someone like my dad, I don't think, is going to quite understand some of the jokes made in this thing, which I think is really interesting about.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know how much into TikTok you guys are. Do you three use the TikTok? Like
my girlfriend is. I see it over her shoulder quite a bit.
I have never TikTok.
Nor have I.
You've never TikTok?
No.
Well, guys, you're missing out. But B, the point of this was that I saw at least three white women have the white women Bo Burnham track as they were like, oh, Bo's just called me out real fire. As they compare like the shots that Bo used and then shots that they have on their Instagram.
Yep.
I
mean,
I thought
even
that was a funny thing.
Definitely out, because even when I was watching it, I was watching it with my girlfriend, and when I think, you know, when he did the shot of like him in the hood like this,
yeah,
she like died of laughter like that bit, and that all that said to me was, she's definitely done. I took that photo before.
Oh, brilliant. But yeah, I thought I just slipped that in there right at the end, because that's where we're at. We're at the end now. It's review time. It's time for you guys to reveal that even though you were, like, this entire time you were forcing the persona of really liking it and thinking it's art, now you can remove the mask and actually tell us how you feel.
I hate it without
the cape of defense. Remove that. You're not defending the film anymore. Aaron, you're the new guest, the first time here.
Yes, this is my first time.
What do you think of the film? Sean, please don't
like
kill
that
yourself.
Film. That was a good movie. Let's just repeat that a few times and watch it and react to it.
Let's go again. Let's go again from one.
No. We carry on. There is no stopping this train.
I guess, in terms of final thoughts, I love Inside. I think it's essential cinema. I think Bo Burnham has announced himself as one of the most interesting filmmakers working today. I think he's playing with the form in fascinating ways. And also, I do think, obviously, there are generational gaps, but I think there's something about Inside that I would like to show to my parents, because I think it would breach conversations that otherwise I don't even know how to have. And I think that it's doing a lot of stuff that it's very hard to look at from a distance, but I think we could all engage with the conversations he's having, because I think the conversation he wants to have is an emotional one and it's a personal one. And I think that's what Inside actually does best. But beyond all of the insight and all of the clever jokes, I think it really works on an emotional human level. And I think it's worth watching.
I would agree with that.
Good stuff. Sean, as the other guest.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really top what Aaron's just said. For me, I want to see it released in a cinema. The challenging of all forms and conventions and how this shouldn't work. I think there's only one place left to do it. You know, it's like the best thing Michael Haneke could have done after making Funny Games was, you know, the only joke left to tell was to remake it shot for shot, note for note in American.
Yeah.
That for me is worthy of it. And I think I would really like to see how this plays in the cinema. I think it's got legs. I think we're going to look back on it as a touchstone of this period of time, but also a period of time when I hope that we soften. I can't speak for a whole nation, but I can certainly speak as a man. I think what I really related to about this was just the ability for him to share a vulnerability. And I think there's real strength in that. And I think by making it about things that are universal and especially a universal experience, I hope that if nothing else, jokes aside, that as Aaron said, it starts a conversation, but I hope part of that conversation is saying it's okay to not be okay.
Mm.
Good stuff. And Charlie, as the other host, what do you have to say?
I mean, these two smashed it, really, didn't they? They said
it's
exactly
a good film.
How I feel.
It's magic.
Yeah,
it's magic.
Top two,
magic.
Really.
It's magic, mate.
But I feel like I've pretty much said everything I love about it. I agree. I think it's raised the bar. I think it's in its own lane of what he's trying to achieve here. I think the achievement itself is award-winning itself, let alone bloody it actually being great, not just good. Do you know what I mean? I think it's hilarious. Funny, touching, it's everything you want from a movie experience. And that's why I kind of said it's kind of like a movie documentary / musical one man, like it's kind of all these things, because it has those beats. I do actually think it has a three, maybe even four act structure to it that I think it has that. It has the emotional beats, it has these characters that he creates, and I don't know what more I can say. I'm almost like lost for words now, because I was like that watching it. All I kept saying was like, damn, this guy's talented. I was almost like kicking myself. Like, this guy is on another level. I just think he's having important conversations that need to be had. He's really summing up what happened during lockdown and this sort of generation and what's happening right now in society in general with social media and stuff. In a very nuanced way and a funny way, but also a dark way. And I mean, yeah, I just had a blast. I had a real blast, and I'm probably going to watch the shit out of it. But like Sean said, I'm very intrigued to see how it plays in a couple of years' time and if I still feel the same revisiting it. But yeah, Bo Burnham's Inside, brilliant. How about
Fair
you,
enough. Well, as I already said, I kind of played, I showed my cards at what, like the halfway point. I get where you guys are coming from, but then I also get where the reviews are coming from, and I'm kind of just sat, I guess, on the fence. Like, I know it's good. I think I gave it like a 4 out of 5 or something. Like, I understand, appreciate, and acknowledge that it's masterclass. It's, if you don't have anything to do, watch the film, be inspired to make some shit. It'll be great. But I don't know. It just, on some levels, it wasn't for me, I guess. Maybe, I don't know. And the fact that I had to watch it twice within a week period, and I didn't, like, I got more enjoyment out of it the first time than the second. It's one of those that I agree with you guys that I want to see how it's reacted to in the future. Like, when this whole situation that we're in as a planet, the pandemic, the lockdowns, when that's become like a memory rather than something we're currently experiencing, will that date the piece and make it like unwatchable and like I don't care about this because it's not relevant anymore? Or will it be like reminiscent and a refresher on that and connect with you on a spiritual level? And especially because Bo Burnham is a masterclass at individual songs, and the fact that I already brought up that I've watched some of the individual music videos on YouTube, it'll be interesting to see if, like some of his other specials, where some go viral and get this big spotlight and others just fade into obscurity, and you will only ever hear that when you go back and revisit the entire movie. So it's one of those, you know, it's a comedy special. It's very subjective. It's not going to rub everyone the same way. And in this class, in this situation, it rubbed you guys real good. And now you're real happy. You got that good rub.
Rub-a-dub-dub, baby.
But yeah. Those are my thoughts and feelings. I appreciate it, but... Aaron.
Yes.
What do you do? Do you have like a social place you want to direct people, or like a project? Well, maybe you said something about scripts, so maybe you want to point something at something.
I do, but I don't know. In the spirit of Inside, I'm a bit like, maybe I shouldn't give you any of these things. I'm kind of off social media on purpose.
Nah, and it's fine. I'm a bit narcissistic. It's all good.
I mean, you can find me on Vimeo. My work is up there. Aaron Moran at Vimeo.com if you want to check me out. I don't know. I'm not very good at plugging myself. I'll be around.
Love it. Sean, your turn. Plug yourself.
Same thing as always. If you need someone to make some films, I might even bring this one along. SG Films, SeanGrimseyFilms.com, SGrimseyFilms.com, at SeanGrimseyFilms on Instagram. And as always, support wonderful artists like these two gentlemen here, Full Fat, and, you know, yeah, on to Charlie. Plug the socials, baby.
And now we reach the narcissistic peak, the perfect script that Charlie has formulated in his brain. Charlie, upward, go.
Right, well, you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Your Favourite Film Is Awful. You can find us on Patreon as well, Your Favourite Film Is Awful. And you can also find us on Twitter, at FabFilmIsAwful.
Beautiful. So yeah, contact us. Do you agree with what we said? Do you think Bo Burnham's Inside Out is awful? Because we all say it's not awful. It's good enough.
Masterpiece.
It's great.
It's a masterpiece. It's
fantastic.
But also, like, right now, it's really hot, so we're gonna call it quits now. We're done. Bye. Thanks for viewing or listening. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye now. See you later.
Bo Burnham, bye.
Bye
bye.
Bo Burnham, bye. Bye bye. Bye bye.